Hi, this is Dr. Bill Meyer. Thanks for checking out this podcast from Dr. Bill Meyer Live. You can hear the show live every Saturday from 11 a.m. to 12 p.m., and there are many more podcasts for this and all our other faith radio shows available on our website. You can just go to myfaithradio.com. And thanks so much for your gifts to this listener-supported ministry. Enjoy the podcast.
A psychologist, an author, and a veteran broadcaster. But most importantly, he's a dad. Welcome to Dr. Bill Meyer Live on the Faith Radio Network. Stay tuned for a faith and culture connection, a biblical perspective on current events, and practical family advice with psychologist Dr. Bill Meyer. You can join the conversation by calling 877-93-FAITH. That's 877-933-2484. Now, let's join Bill Meyer live.
Well, good morning. What can the world of professional sports teach us about being a good parent? We're going to be talking to a sports agent about that very issue coming up, a guy who has worked with some of the top NFL players in the league and has really seen the impact of poor parenting on those young men. And from that, he has learned some things about his own role as a dad. You will find this conversation fascinating. Stick around for our talk with Drew Pittman here in just a few minutes on the Faith Radio Network. We hope your Saturday is going well. And if you are one of the great folks that made a gift to Faith Radio in the last couple of weeks through our share event, just want to say thank you. Actually, let me say thank you, thank you, thank you, because that was just so kind of you. You may know, maybe you don't know, that here at Faith Radio, we depend on gifts from listeners just like you to stay on the radio, and so many of our friends came forward during our share event and made a donation to Faith Radio, and my goodness, it warms my heart to know that there are so many wonderful folks throughout the Upper Midwest who believe in this network and what we stand for. And what do we stand for? If you're brand new to Faith Radio, well, of course, one of the things we want to do is to share the gospel with those who don't know Jesus Christ. And another thing we want to do is edify believers, to build them up in their faith, to disciple them, to help them become more effective, and to teach people how to become a better evangelist, a better apologist for the Christian faith. That's what Faith Radio is all about. And if you missed our share event, you still have time to make a gift to Faith Radio. If you just go to myfaithradio.com and click on the donate link there, you'll see a photo of my good buddy Dick Whitworth and learn all about how you can be a regular Faith Radio contributor. Well, as you probably know, one of the things I love to do on this program every week is look at some of the research about things that can impact us as Christians, as parents, as husbands and wives, and even as parishioners, as people that go to church on a regular basis. And I found something this week that it startled me, but maybe I really wasn't that surprised by it when I looked deeper. Could your pastor be depressed? Well, according to a new report, it is certainly possible that that's the case. Lifeway Research and Focus on the Family teamed up to do this survey, and they found that 1 in 4 pastors acknowledge they have personally struggled with mental illness, things like depression and anxiety and other mental health issues. And about half of those pastors said that the mental illness had actually been formally diagnosed, perhaps by a physician or a psychologist or a psychiatrist. Now, according to Christianity Today, the recent suicide deaths of some high-profile pastors' kids, including Rick Warren's son Matthew, have resulted in increased attention to mental illness from the pulpit. And I think that's a great thing. Boy, oh boy, as a clinical psychologist, the fact that more pastors are paying attention to this issue. In fact, Rick Warren, you may not know this, he launched this event called The Gathering on Mental Health in the Church this past spring, where he brought experts together and pastors together to say, hey, you know, we got to talk about this stuff. And I think as tragic as his son's death was, and you may know that Matthew, Rick Warren's son, had struggled with depression for some time, and as tragic and horrible as that incident was, it is resulting in some good, and that conversations have been started. Also, in the last year, some high-profile pastors, including a guy named Perry Noble, he's a pastor of a megachurch called New Spring Church, he has talked about his own struggles with mental illness. But it's still not, I would say it's still very rare that a pastor will mention to anyone, whether it's his congregation, even sometimes his inner circle, his elder board, that he is struggling with something like depression or anxiety. In fact, Ed Stetzer, who is the director of Lifeway Research, says, if you reveal your struggle with mental illness as a pastor, it's going to limit your opportunities. What happens is pastors who are struggling with mental illness tend not to say it until they are already successful. Isn't that sad? That, you know, you may have a guy who is struggling to do everything right and has his church on the right track and is really tending to his flock, and yet he is just in the depths of despair and depression, and he can't tell anybody because he's afraid he'll get fired, he'll get let go, perhaps by his denomination or by his own church, depending on the government structure of that particular church and denomination. Pastor Perry Noble, the megachurch pastor, the one who admitted that he had struggled with depression, says, I think Christians have been slower than the population at large to recognize what mental illness is, let alone what they should do about it. So if you dig into this Lifeway study, what they found, in addition to the fact that one in four pastors say they've struggled with mental illness, that's, again, one in four, my friends. So think about your town, your city. Right here in the Twin Cities, let's just say one out of four churches. You're driving down the street and you see four churches on a corner. In one of those churches, the chances are there is a pastor, perhaps a senior pastor, who is struggling with mental illness. But in addition to that, the Lifeway study found that still the majority of pastors, 66%, still rarely or never talk about mental illness from the pulpit. They don't talk about it in sermons. They don't talk about it in large groups, even in small groups. Ed Stetzer with Lifeway says, our research found that people who suffer from mental illness often turn to their pastor for help, but pastors need more guidance and preparation for dealing with mental health crises. And let me just say, if you or someone you know is struggling with depression or anxiety, and I have a feeling there might even be a pastor listening this morning, and I'm talking right to you. If you are struggling with this, there is help for you. And one of the best places to go is Focus on the Family. Focus on the Family, first of all, has a free telephone counseling service. You may not know about this. If you call them Monday through Friday at 1-800-A-FAMILY, you can talk to a licensed, caring Christian therapist who will help you with whatever you're dealing with. And you know, it could be depression, anxiety. It could be you struggling with a rebellious teen. It could be you're having a marital crisis right now. Not only will they talk to you on the phone, do a crisis counseling session, they'll also refer you to a licensed Christian counselor in your area, somebody that's been carefully screened by Focus. They have thousands of, maybe tens of thousands of people on their list, and all you do is give them your zip code and they'll give you some names. Also, pastors, they have a pastor's hotline. And if you are struggling, you can call them anonymously, and you can get some help, get some practical counseling on the phone from another pastor, from somebody who maybe has dealt with this before, and they'll send you some resources. And one other thing, Focus on the Family occasionally has these wonderful pastors' conferences at their headquarters in Colorado Springs, and I know so many pastors and their wives who have been encouraged by these events. So please avail yourselves of this wonderful resource. Again, their number, 1-800-A-FAMILY. They don't believe their counseling department is open on Saturdays unless they've changed their hours, but it's 1-800-A-FAMILY. You can check out their website at focusonthefamily.com. Well, it's 12 minutes past the hour. I'm Bill Meyer. Coming up next, we'll look at the world of professional sports and what it can teach us about being a good parent. Stick with us here on the Faith Radio Network.
It's Dr. Bill Meyer live on Faith Radio. Get ready to join the conversation. Now let's join Dr. Bill Meyer live.
Hey, welcome back. What can the world of professional sports teach us about being good parents, particularly dads? What can it teach us about being a good father in the lives of our sons and daughters? That's going to be our topic today here on the Faith Radio Network. My guest is Drew Pittman. Drew is a principal and partner in Doman and Pittman, which is one of America's premier sports agencies. More than 100 players represented by Drew's firm have been drafted into the National Football League. More than a dozen of his clients have played in Super Bowls and Pro Bowls. Drew lives near Austin, Texas, with his wife, Lane, his two sons. And today he joins us to talk about his new book, First Team Dad, Your Playbook for a Winning Family. And Drew, welcome to Faith Radio.
Thank you, Bill. I appreciate you having me on.
Well, first of all, I want to say thank you because I know you had to cut a little bike tour short this morning just to be our guest here on Faith Radio.
Well, we made it, and it's a beautiful day here in Central Texas, and just great to be out there in God's beautiful country, and glad we made it safely.
Well, I'm glad you did too, because I'm a cyclist myself, and I've had one or two little mishaps that have resulted in, well, if most listeners who have ever ridden a mountain bike know what a snake bite is, and it ain't pleasant. Let me ask you this, Drew. I'm guessing a lot of our listeners have seen the movie Jerry Maguire, starring Tom Cruise, which is all about the life of a professional sports agent. What parts of that film are based on reality, and what parts are totally fictional?
Well, if I had a dollar for every time somebody said, "Oh, so you're like Jerry Maguire," I could probably retire. But you know, there was a lot that was reality. You know, there is lots of travel. There can be as much travel as you want there to be. And then, you know, there is a cutthroat nature to the industry and the way a lot of people do the business. And then, you know, the other thing is there is a way to do the business like Tom Cruise found out in the movie, where it can be about the player and it can be about the relationship. And that's the way we've chosen to do the business. It's about relationships. It's, you know, we tell our clients all the time that we want them to pursue excellence. And pursuing excellence is being the best player they can be, being the best teammate they can be, being the best employee they can be, being the best husband eventually and father. And we tell them that if they pursue excellence, then they don't have to pursue money, and they don't have to pursue fame, and they don't have to pursue all those things that a lot of players pursue, because if you pursue excellence, those things pursue you. Mm-hmm. And so that's just kind of our theory and our motto for our clients and for ourselves.
Now, what got you into this whole world of being a sports agent? I mean, were you in sports yourself growing up, or did you go the business route in school? How did you end up? I mean, that's kind of a rare profession if you think about it.
I get this question a lot, and my joke answer is that I got hit on the head and lost my mind. But really, I played sports growing up and loved sports, and it's always been a big part of my life. I actually went to Southern Methodist University and played on the nationally ranked soccer team there.
Oh, wow.
I was there at the same time of the Pony Express days with Eric Dickerson and Craig James and Lance McElhaney and Michael Carter and all those guys. And so our locker room was right next to theirs, and became friends with a lot of those guys. And as they got out of college and went on into the NFL, I just saw that they were being treated like assets in a company instead of like human beings with goals and dreams and desires. And so through a twist of fate, at 29 years old, I was in a position to really make a change and do what I felt like God was calling me to do. And so I sent $150 to the state of Texas to incorporate, and called myself a sports agent, and got open doors, and led to Craig Doman and I becoming partners, and this was 22 years ago that Craig and I became partners, and so it just, I really feel like this is what I was called to do.
What, give me just a feel for what you do on a daily basis. I'm sure part of it is you're looking for potential clients, you know, the kids who are playing great college ball or even high school ball, moving kind of up through the ranks. And just like, you know, an NFL scout, you're watching for who's the guy that you might be able to sign that you believe has the potential to be successful, because, of course, an agent makes his or her money based on a percentage of what the client makes and the contracts that the client signs. So just give me a feel for maybe a day-to-day, week-to-week peek into the life of a sports agent, especially Drew Pittman as a sports agent.
Well, one of the things that I really love about the business is there is really no such thing as a typical day. A lot of times I sit in my office behind my desk and I'm on the computer, I'm on the phone, I'm doing things that are not the things that a lot of people imagine when they think about a sports agent. You know, they always think about, you know, being at a game and, you know, hanging out with players and owners and all those things. And we do some of that. But so I do like the fact that there's not just a typical day. And I like the fact that in the business there's really two major things that we do. One is we get clients, and then the second one is we take care of those clients. And so there's a lot of things that are incorporated in those two major functions. But you know, and we are watching games, and we are talking to NFL scouts and player personnel people and trying to find out, you know, who are the guys that are really going to be, you know, not only the good players, but we're looking for guys that are a good fit with us, and guys that, you know, that, you know, I tell a player all the time when I'm meeting them, I ask them, I said, you know, are you looking for somebody that's going to tell you the truth? And are you looking for somebody that is going to be a leader? Because a lot of agents are what I call cheerleaders. Oh, you're the greatest. Oh, I don't know why you're not getting more playing time. Let me call the team and tell them, you know, what idiots they are. And, you know, and so that's not me. I'm a guy who's gonna lead a player and help them become the best that they can possibly be, not only as a player, but also as a person, because those things go hand in hand. And so a lot of guys, you know, they you know, they're not digging that. You know, they want a cheerleader. And so that's fine. They can there's plenty of them out there. But I'm looking for the right fit, and as a firm, you know, that's the way we feel like is the best way to do business. And you know, one thing that I do find is that a lot of agents they are constantly on the road. Like I said, you can travel as much as you want to. We made the decision, Craig and I both, and we're in the process of expanding and having some other agents join our firm, and we all feel the same way and have done it the same, and that is that we want to be balanced. You know, we're husbands and dads. You know, we're in our communities as well as in this business. And so I'm not interested in getting every single client that I can and at the expense of my family or at the expense of being a integral part of my community and my church. And so we're picking and choosing, and you know, I'm always asking God to just give me the clients that I'm supposed to represent, and it's worked out well for over 23 years now.
Mm-hmm. How has it been trying to navigate the world of being a professional sports agent with your Christianity? Because I know there are a lot of people, and I think Jerry Maguire, the film, gives us a great window into that world, that there are a lot of agents that are, it's so cutthroat, and there's a lot of deception and, frankly, out and out lying that goes on. And I'm guessing, and you correct me if I'm wrong, that perhaps the minority, a small minority of sports agents are believers. Am I correct?
Well, I would say yes. I know, and I'm friends with a handful of other agents. Like I said, we're just bringing four new agents or four agents that we've been friends with that are believers, and they're high character, you know, high quality people, as well as very excellent agents as well. And so, you know, there's a handful of others, and we're all friends. You know, it's funny, I'm tweeting stuff, and they're tweeting stuff, and they're liking and favoriting and, you know, retweeting and all that, you know, and we support each other because we do things, you know, in a similar way. And, you know, as far as all the other stuff that's going on, I don't really worry about all that. I'm not concerned with who's cheating and who's doing what, and you know, I am just I'm just behaving in a way that is going to honor God. I'm trusting Him. You know, I've told my family and you know other agents in our firm, and my partner and I have talked about this. You know, the NFL is not our provider. You know, our clients are not our provider. Our Father in heaven is our provider, and so we know that if we just do things that we're supposed to do, and we walk in the Spirit and listen to the voice of the Lord, that you know we're not going to have to worry about any of that. And so that's what we do.
Wow, inspiring words there, Drew. And we should mention that the book First Team Dad really is taking a lot of these things that you have learned in your work, especially your work with these young men who've come up through the ranks and gone into professional sports, and applying it to your own family, and then giving advice to men who are raising sons and daughters. And I commend you for that. Tony Dungy actually wrote a foreword to your book. How'd that all happen?
Well, Tony and I are friends, and you know, we obviously you meet a lot of people doing the business, and then you know, Tony and I have run into each other a few times, you know, after he had gotten out of the business, and the friendship just grew. And you know, but like he says in the foreword, that, you know, we realized that we both felt like our calling was not to be successful football people, but, you know, our calling was to help young men be the best that they could be. And so our friendship just grew, and you know, he's still very active in the football world, and he'll call me or send me an email or a text and say, hey, I met a guy and looking for a Christian agent, and I gave him your name, and you know, I'll call him and say, hey, I'm talking to this family, and they asked for a reference, and he'll contact them on my behalf, and so, you know, we have a common goal, which is to use the platform that God's given us to affect the lives of anybody that we can, you know, for Christ, and to you know, to be a servant. And so that's it's always easy for friendships to grow when you both have that kind of feeling.
Well said. We're talking to Drew Pittman about his new book, First Team Dad, Your Playbook for a Winning Family. This is the Faith Radio Network. We're going to take a quick break and be right back with more and some great stories from the NFL up next.
Continues right now, and we want to hear from you. Call us at 877-933-2484. That's 877-933-2484. Now, here's Dr. Bill Meyer again on Faith Radio.
And welcome back. Our guest today is Drew Pittman. He is a sports agent and represents many NFL players who you are familiar with and who have even played in Super Bowls. He has a new book out called First Team Dad, Your Playbook for a Winning Family, where he takes some of the things that he has learned about working with athletes and applying it to his own family, and that you can apply to your family. And Drew, what did you see? I know working with NFL players, you're dealing with a lot of young men who come from fatherless homes. And if you just look at the stats, let's just take the African-American community. About two-thirds of African-American boys live in homes in which do not have their biological father present. In fact, there's a researcher at Yale who once said that in many, and this is really sad, he said in many black neighborhoods in America, a father is like a UFO. You've heard they exist, but you've never seen one. And I know that the impact, I've personally seen the impact as a family psychologist of fatherlessness on kids, but you're seeing it big time with many of these athletes. I'm guessing, correct me if I'm wrong, that many of the men, young men that you have represented come from fatherless homes. Am I correct?
You know, I think the fatherless epidemic in our nation goes beyond, I think it goes beyond race. I think it goes beyond profession. I'm seeing it really more and more everywhere. You know, the NFL is just a microcosm of the world. You know, I'm seeing it in my community, in my church even. And so, you know, I'm seeing it everywhere, really, to answer your question. And you know, I think the fatherless epidemic, the stats are just mind-boggling. I give a bunch of them in the book at the beginning. But, you know, the other thing that I'm seeing is just the effect of the father. You know, I coach my kids, all my kids' teams, as my boys have grown up and being a soccer player, I coach their select soccer teams, and you know, I see dads at games, but they're down the sidelines and they're talking on their cell phones, and you know, not just my team, but the opposing team and the other team. You know, you see kind of disengaged fathers because life is just hectic. And so I'm not throwing stones. It takes intentionality to not be disengaged. And you know, this life is just moving fast, and it seems like everybody's treading water. And it's kind of where I was in some extent. You know, I was probably more involved in my kids' lives than a lot of dads can be, just because I own my own business. And where we moved to this little town intentionally to get out of the rat race and to be able to be more involved. And so it's a bigger problem than just the fatherless dad.
Certainly.
I mean, the fatherless home.
Certainly. And yet we're talking about big, strong athletes, and we've seen some stuff in the news lately that has, of course, concerned all of us. And when you have a boy who grows up without a dad, oftentimes he doesn't learn, first of all, some important things about character, but he also often doesn't learn how to channel his aggression, that natural aggression that men and boys have, in appropriate ways. And that can lead to some real problems when you're talking about a 300-pound lineman.
Yeah.
So let's talk about that for a minute. These guys that haven't had dads and have grown up in some pretty bad neighborhoods where there's often gang involvement, how do you, as an agent, I'm guessing you have to do a little bit of fathering yourself at times with these guys.
You know, I look at it more like a mentor-type role and you know, maybe a big brother, especially now that I'm a lot older than when I got into the business. But you know, there is opportunity to you know, to mentor, disciple, whatever you want to call it, and just sow into the lives of young men. And that is the number one reason why I'm in the business. It's the most rewarding part of it. You know, more so than watching a guy trot out there and be announced and starting his first game, you know, ever as a rookie or whatever. You know, more than that is just when a guy calls you and goes, hey, man, you know, appreciate the advice on, you know, how to deal with this situation, with the, whether it be a wife, a kid, a girlfriend, or whatever. And that's where you're really making a difference.
And I appreciate that about you, Drew, when you talk about some of those experiences in the book. In fact, Let's take a look at some of those behind the scenes experiences that you share, and how really some of the advice that you've given to players really applies to dads, all the dads that are listening today, whether that be in sports or just in the home in general.
Awesome. Yeah, and I think it's more than just, you know, it's being a dad. It's also, you know, being a husband. You know, I feel like if our, you know, what I talk about in the book is just being greatness in your home, being a leader. You know, I have a chance to see behind the scenes in NFL organizations and college organizations, and, you know, the teams that are finishing first and the teams that are finishing last, it usually boils down to the same thing. It's their leadership. And so if we're going to be greatness in our homes as husbands and dads, then, you know, we can't just be great dads and you know, okay, mediocre husbands. And, you know, the thing that really hit me, Bill, when I had my aha moment was, you know, I looked at my wife and I looked at my two boys and I thought, wow, God has given me human beings that I am responsible to love and nurture into who He's called them to be. And I asked myself, I said, are you great? And the answer was, you know, I'm good, and sometimes I'm great, and sometimes I'm terrible, and that's still the case. But, you know, if we're going to be greatness in our homes, then we have to be intentional about it. And so that's how this all came about. I started prayerfully considering what I could do and started jotting down things in my quiet time on a legal pad and came up with 30 things and started implementing them and saw great response and just, you know, great things happening in my home. And so I started journaling about what was happening, and that's how this actually became a book.
Hmm. Let's dive into a few of those things and maybe how they things that you've learned, again, from your work that you've then applied to your family.
Sure. One of my favorite chapters is chapter 2. It's called Create a Culture. And you know, I feel like I'm really big on culture, whether it be, you know, in business, in a school, in a football team, or just a home. The culture is really everybody. There's a culture everywhere, and so the story that I use is, you know, Nick Saban took over the Alabama football team. You know, storied history at Alabama, but they were in a mess. They'd been through a lot of scandal. They were on NCAA probation. It was a mess, and so he came in there and he realized the first thing he had to do was change the culture. And I had an opportunity to hear Coach Saban speak at the American Football Coaches Association National Convention. And he had been there for 2 years, and his third year he won the national championship. And so he talks about it, and all the great coaches that I hear speak at convention always start their talk the same way. And they say, the way we do it at our place is. Mm-hmm. And then they tell you what their culture is. And so he talked about how he had to come in and get commitment and the things that were required of his players. And it was really inspiring. But as I thought about that, I thought, you know, that's what we got to do in our homes. And so what I did was I sat my family down, and my wife and I had talked about it before. And actually, we didn't have one of those, okay, we're going to have a family meeting, because the kids always zone out then. But we were actually taking a walk out in the countryside, and I asked the question of my boys. I said, hey, if we moved away from here and a year from now, our friends were sitting around talking and they said, hey, y'all remember the Pittmans? What would they say about us? And, of course, my youngest son said, oh, they'd say I was the best athlete. And my oldest son said, oh, they'd say I was the smartest. But we really kind of guided them along. We said, what would we want them to say about us? And so we determined four things that were going to be the way we do it at our place. And it was, you know, people are going to know we love Jesus. It was number one. That's the cornerstone. And then the second thing was that we were servants, that we were going to serve that we served each other and that we served the community. And the third one was that we were people of character and integrity. And the fourth thing was that we were a disciplined people, and we did the right things, and we did it without being asked, and we were just people that did the right things. And so that's the way we do it at our place, and it's very intentional. And the cool thing that I didn't really anticipate but that has happened since then is that whenever something happens in our home, because it's not perfect by any means, and I'm not perfect, but when things would happen, we could go, oh, is that the way we do it at our place? And so it's like a roadmap, not only for the kids, but, you know, they can call us out too. And so it's great.
You know, one of the things we've had to start doing in our family, Drew, and I'm sure you can relate to this, is telling our kids, you know, in our family, we have chosen to do it this way because we believe that is the way God wants us to do it. And that really comes up oftentimes with our kids. And we live in a nice neighborhood where many of the other families give their kids pretty much everything, the latest technology, whatever their hearts desire, and there's not a lot required of those kids. And I personally believe that, and I'm sure you would agree, there's just far too many families where moms and dads are enabling their kids by not requiring anything of them and giving them everything, and they want to be their best buddy rather than be their mom and dad. And so our kids will come home and go, well, but Bobby's family or Susie gets or all, every kid I know. And this has come up just recently with my son. He just started middle school. Okay. So he just entered sixth grade.
Oh,
and
wow.
he swears that every sixth grader in his school has a cell phone. Now, of course, you and I know that's not true, but unfortunately in our neck of the woods, a great number of kids do. I don't think a sixth grader needs a cell phone. That's my opinion. Some parents may disagree with me. I survived just fine without a cell phone in sixth grade. But my son coming home and saying, but everybody has one. And so we got into a discussion with him. And one of the things we have to just keep reiterating this and say, in our home, these are our priorities. And we talked about the fact that how much a cell phone costs, not just initially, but how much it costs to have that monthly plan, which, of course, he had no clue about. Well, the other kids, their parents pay for it. Well, we're not going to. And we actually used this example, whether it was a good example or not, I don't know. But we said, okay, look, we sponsor two kids through Compassion International. And that costs us about $35 a month per kid, so about $70 a month for these two children that we are sponsoring in Peru. And we said, you know, we can get you a cell phone plan, but – you know, little Jose down there in that village, he's never going to see a cell phone. I mean, he's lucky if he has a, you know, a little tin can with a string on it where he can talk to his brother.
Right.
And so we have to make decisions in our family. We have to set our priorities. And we frankly don't believe that a sixth grader needs a cell phone. Now, he didn't want to hear that answer, but that's something what we're finding is we have to come back to again and again and again, Drew. And don't you feel like, as a Christian parent, I'm sure you've talked to others, that we are just, I've used this analogy before, this picture. We are like salmon trying to swim upstream, and all the other parents, all the other salmon that are enabling their kids, entitling their kids, are swimming downstream, and they're bonking us on the head as we try to do the right thing.
Absolutely. And I've got a great comeback for you, for your sixth grader, because we have the same conversation with our seventh grader, who still does not have a cell phone, by the way. He said, I got to have one. You know, I got to be able to communicate with y'all. Every single one of my friends has one. I go, well, good, use theirs. You don't need one. Everybody's got one.
If there's an emergency, that's right. If you need to call 911, there's plenty of phones all around you.
That's right. So anyway, you know, I think those things are very real. And here's the other thing that I tell my boys. I said, look, God gave me and your mother, you and your brother. We're responsible for y'all. I'm not responsible for your friends. I'm not responsible for what their parents do. They're going to have to answer to the Lord on what the decisions they've made. And so, you know, we're making the decisions for you and your brother that we feel are best for y'all. And I'm not responsible for those other kids. I'm not responsible to do things the way they do it. I'm seeking the Lord on how I'm supposed to parent you two guys. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to do what he tells me or what I feel like he's directing me to do before I'm going to do what they're doing because they're doing it. And Amen. That's hard to argue with.
Yeah, it really is. And it's a great, great response. We're talking to Drew Pittman. He is the author of First Team Dad, Your Playbook for a Winning Family, here on the Faith Radio Network. By the way, this book just came out. It is available. Dads, you got to pick it up. It's fantastic. It will help you in so many ways. And, boy, if you like sports, there's also some great sports analogies in there as well. We're going to take a quick break here on the Faith Radio Network. We'll be right back and conclude our conversation with Drew Pittman after this.
Now back to Dr. Bill Meyer live on Faith Radio.
And welcome back. We'd love to hear from you. In fact, if you call us here in the next few minutes, we will put you into a drawing for a copy of one of the books that we've been talking about today, First Team Dad, Your Playbook for a Winning Family, written by our guest, Drew Pittman. Great book, dads. Got to get this. It's on Baker Publishing has put this particular book out. Drew, we've just got about 10 minutes left, and there's so many great things in this book, but let's dive into a few other concepts that you talk about. One is redefining success. And that has to happen in the sports world in many ways, because athletes have maybe the wrong view of success, where it's all about money and stuff. But it has to happen with many dads as well. So tell us what you mean when you say redefine success.
Well, I think we fall into that same trap a lot of times, because you know, most guys are driven. You know, we have been taught in, and we've been taught through sports, that, you know, the goal is to win. And so a lot of times I think that's led to kind of the win at all costs, and, you know, win no matter what it does. And, you know, when we're husbands and dads, sometimes that means the collateral damage is our family. And so I think, you know, one of the things that I did is, when I had to redefine success, it was, you know, I want to be successful in business. I do. I have a desire to be successful. You know, I want to be number, you know, first and foremost, I want to be the best agent that is around. And I want to give my clients good advice and help them achieve their goals and their dreams. But, you know, that can't be at the cost of my family. And so then I have to decide, okay, what is success? What really is success? It's not just business. It's not just in the bank account. And you know, I have no problem with people who want to be successful and be financially blessed. I don't think that's a terrible thing in and of itself. But you know, I want to have a great family. I want to have, you know, a great relationship with my kids. You know, I want my wife to have a reason to love, honor, and respect me as the Bible's telling her to, you know. And so those things were important too. And the story that I use is a great story. Mike Minner was one of our clients. Awesome, awesome man of God. He's now the head football coach at Campbell University in North Carolina. Played for Nebraska and then for the Carolina Panthers, and had a great NFL career. But, you know, when Mike was at the University of Nebraska, all he'd ever thought about, all he'd ever dreamed about, was being in the NFL and being a successful player. And he had that one of those moments where he was on the field and he was going back defending a pass, and he hears that pop in his knee. And he goes down and he's looking up into the Nebraska sky, and it's dark, and he goes, you know, he knew that, you know, this could be it. You know, all his dreams might be over, and he said, God, is this it? Is this all there is? And he said, you know, if you'll allow me to come back from this, I'm going to live my life for you, and I'm going to let you determine what happens with my career. And it was to me, it's a poignant moment. And when Mike speaks at a lot of churches and men's groups, and, you know, he tells that story, and you know, for him, that's where he redefined success. Now, he went on to have a successful career, but more than that, he has affected and touched so many people, because his heart is to give back to people, and God's provided him the platform.
Great story. Another thing you talk about in your book that's really key is that we need to be selfless as dads. And I'll admit, I struggle with that myself because a lot of times my work and my schedule and my, frankly, exhaustion can get in the way of me being fully present to my wife and to my kids. I work a kind of a crazy schedule right now. And yet I'm realizing, you know what? I'm not nearly as selfless as I would like to be. And certainly I need to be following the model of my Lord and Savior, who was completely selfless. What do you say to dads in that regard?
Well, you know, anybody that says they don't struggle with selfishness in some form or fashion, you know, if they really don't, man, I want to meet them because it's just part of the fallen nature that we have. And so, you know, the stories that I talk about are players, you know, Jared Cook, who's tied in for the St. Louis Rams, great player. But, you know, Jared has always been a guy that's been about the team. He's been about, you know, he feels like if he just does his job, does what they ask of him, then, you know, he's gonna be fine. And then Billy Badgema, who was also a tight end and played for the 49ers, the Rams, and the Ravens, you know, I ran into one of his coaches when he was with the 49ers, and, you know, Billy's just a great guy, but his coach was talking about, you know, how, you know, Billy was all about the team and never was a guy. He wasn't Vernon Davis. You know, he was the guy that was blocking and opening up holes and just, you know, the coach was talking about how much he respected Billy for that and how much the team respected him. And I think that's, you know, those are lessons that we can learn. And if we learn how to put others first, then, you know, I think it that's the way we're supposed to be. And as dads, you know, the first thing you realize when you get married and then have kids is that you know, we're at the bottom of the totem pole when it comes to whose desires get fulfilled first. Mm-hmm. And you know, that's the way it's supposed to be.
And you know, as a husband, and I've recommended this on this program before, I don't know what you think of this, but I've done it a couple of times. You just need to occasionally check in with your wife at a time when, you know, neither of you are stressed out. I actually did this recently over. We had a date night, I think our first date night in like 6 months, which is unfortunate. We have three younger kids, they're 11, 9, and 7. And, but we had a date night. And over dinner, I said to her, honey, let me ask you a loaded question. And she's kind of, her eyes get real wide, like, what's he going to ask me? And I said, how can I be a better husband to you? And she said, wow, let me give that some thought. And then she had some answers, and some of those answers were things maybe I didn't want to hear at the time. But I think every guy, every husband needs to ask his wife that at least once a year, if not more often, to kind of check in, because sometimes there are things, you know, wives, you know this, I'm sure with your own wife, they're long-suffering. They are just incredible. You know, they'll take a lot and get inside. They may be hurting. There's that Sanctus Real song, where the guys sing, lead me, Lord, you know, to be a better husband and a father. And I think so many of our wives are in that situation. But if we don't ask the question, we may never know. And so I suggest that guys do that.
I agree 100%. You know, this book, there's 30 chapters. Guys, if you're listening and you're going, oh, I don't have time to read, every chapter is 3 to 5 pages, because I wrote it for guys like me, and I'm like you, and I don't have that much time either. But it's 3 to 5 pages. At the end of every chapter, there is a game plan section, which is this is how you implement this. So it's very easy. And I think, you know, Bill, you brought up checking in with your wife, and there's probably 1,000 more things like these 30. And so, you know, nobody's perfect, and I'm certainly not perfect, and I'm certainly, you know, not a parenting expert, but I'm just a dude who's trying to be great. And so I put down the things that I felt like were helping me, and I hope they help you guys who read the book. And I think you'll enjoy it. You'll enjoy the stories, and I think it'll be helpful, and it'll probably get you thinking about, you know, 30 other things, and it will spur you on to greatness.
Drew, we appreciate you so much and your dedication to the family and to these wonderful athletes. Drew Pittman, the author of First Team Dad, Your Playbook for a Winning Family, and pick up the book this week. Thank you so much for joining us, Drew. May the Lord continue to bless you in your work.
Bill, thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to this podcast from Dr. Bill Meyer Live. If you'd like more information about this show, just go to myfaithradio.com and click on the program page for Dr. Bill Meyer Live.